Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Phillies and Braves game two tonight. Scott Lauber, Philly Inquirer, now joins us. First of all, welcome back. It's always great to hear you on the other end.
Steve, it's good to be here.
They beat Spencer Strider in game one, and not only that, the first time the Braves have been shut out in 2 years at home. You sat there, watched it. What did you think of it?
It was pretty unbelievable, to be honest with you. I mean, I think if you were to handicap the series before it started, you would have thought, you know, game one was the one that the Braves were gonna win, and win, you know, I don't know, fairly handily because of the pitching matchup and because of the fact that there was no Zach Wheeler in game one or Aaron Nola in game one. You know, the Phillies don't do very much against Spencer Strider. Typically, Braves were coming off a bye and had done pretty much everything that they didn't do last year. They did everything in reverse, really. They held their workouts in the evening to simulate the flow of a game day. They invited fans in to ratchet up the atmosphere a little bit. They brought in minor leaguers to play against so that they could stay sharp, and still they come out and can't score a run in the first game. You know, I thought the Phillies stole game one. I thought they had a terrific game plan. I thought they found a weakness in the Braves offense. I thought they found a weakness in exploiting high velocity against the Braves. I thought they found a weakness in exploiting the running game against the Braves. So they had a plan. They executed it perfectly. They won 3-0, and now they are absolutely in the driver's seat in the series. And you have to wonder, how much they're also in the Braves' heads as well.
Agreed with that last part. Is this best of five format? Is this the most dangerous round of the playoffs for a favored because of the fact you don't really have time to get back in it?
I think so. I mean, listen, it's probably not a popular opinion among Phillies fans because it's worked to the Phillies' advantage the last couple of years. And it sounds like it's excuse making on the part of the favorites or the division winners who fall behind in these series. But a bye in baseball is not really an advantage.
Right.
As you know, I mean, in baseball, they play pretty much every day for 6 months straight. You get a brief break during the All-Star break, a 3-day break. Otherwise, you're never off more than one day at a time. You're lucky if you get a day off in a week. Sometimes you get a couple. But I think when you don't play for 4 days, you can do as much simulated game as you want. You can do as much preparation as you want. But these guys are baseball players more than any other athletes are creatures of routine. And I think when you take them out of their routine, even when it's intended to give them rest or to make the road easier, it actually makes it harder. I think it's difficult to kind of end the season on that Sunday and then not crank it up again until Friday or Saturday. The Braves also, unlike the and the Dodgers, I guess, have the same issue now too. Unlike in the American League, not only does the favorite get the 4 days off, 5 days off, but really they also get there's a day off between games one and two. So the Phillies were able to start Zach Wheeler on normal rest, and he'll also be able to pitch game five on normal rest if there is one. So I do. I think it's a little bit unnatural to get the bye. I wonder how baseball fixes it, though, because when you introduce more wild card teams, you need to have a first round as opposed to just that one game.
Yeah.
I wonder whether making the division round seven games instead of five is the answer. Because, you know, it just seemed to me going into game one, and I talked to some colleagues and some people on the field about this before game one, it just felt like for a team that won 104 games and hit 307 home runs and had the highest slugging percentage in history and won its division by 14 games and all of those things, there was an awful lot of pressure on the Atlanta Braves in game one. Mm-hmm. And it felt to me like a team that has a season like that shouldn't have that kind of pressure in the first game. And you know, you never want to lose the first game, but if it's a best of seven, at least you feel like you have some breathing room. You don't have that in a five game. So I wonder if that's the way to mitigate the issue. And obviously there are issues with having the season go into the second week of November, but it just feels like the division winners ought to be ought to have a little bit more of a reward than a bye and a home game, extra home game.
There are certain guys that, whatever reason, thrive in this, and they may not be the superstar. Clayton Kershaw's been up and down in this. A guy like John Lester thrived in this.
Yeah.
What is it about Zach Wheeler where he seems to thrive in this? What, you know, because it seems like his heart rate's 45.
Yeah. I think you just said it. I mean, there's no difference. I can tell you, in being around Zach Wheeler in the postseason as opposed to the regular season, there's no difference in the demeanor, in the attitude, in the preparation, in the routine. And I have to believe that it's not a facade. It's real. It's genuine. You know, everyone likes to say, oh, it's just another game, or postseason is just an extension of the regular season. It's another thing to believe it and to perform accordingly. And I think the Phillies have a number of players, including Zach Wheeler, who do that, who can kind of compartmentalize, you know, the stakes being higher, but also, you know, trying to normalize the situation and figure out a way to get through it. He does that. He pitches really well at home. I'm at Truist Park right now. He was born about 5 minutes away from here. He grew up right near here. He pitches very, very well in his hometown. I think the Phillies have got to be really comfortable with the fact that he's going to the mound today with a chance to give them a 2-0 lead in the best of five series. And, you know, the Braves have seen enough of him. They know what to expect. He's got a combination of velocity and just an understanding how to pitch. You know, he added a sweeper, which is a variation of a slider this year, and
right,
giving him another weapon to go to. And, you know, I think all you got to do to understand what makes Wheeler so tough is talk to Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola likes to talk about how Zach Wheeler can pitch at 97, 98, or, you know, and overpower you, or he can pitch to you. You know, he can really work you over with some off-speed and secondary stuff, and there aren't a whole lot of guys in the league, including Aaron Nola, that can do that. So, you know, Wheeler's got it all, really, and like you said, the attitude and the kind of the demeanor to succeed in October.
Because every time I hear somebody say, well, you know, it's just like the regular season, same approach, and so forth, I always ask myself, are they trying to convince me or convince themselves?
Right. Right. And Wheeler is not one of those guys, you know,
right, exactly,
a lot about,
yeah,
it. But, you know, he's not one of those guys who walks around saying, oh, it's just the same. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's those guys who are trying to talk themselves into it rather than feeling it. And he definitely feels that it's just. You know, he's able to handle it, and not everybody is.
I do have to ask you about this guy. He's pitching for the Twins, but you saw him pitch with the Marlins for years, and that's Pablo Lopez. There's a stat on him that blew me away. Everybody talks about first, second, and third time through the order. This season against him, first time through the order, they're hitting .249. Second time through the order, they're hitting .238. Third time through the order, they're hitting .229. Really?
Yeah.
This guy defies analytics. Now, you saw him pitch a lot with Miami, but when you hear something like that, what runs through your mind in this analytics world?
Don't you love that? Don't you love that? Because there aren't enough pitchers these days who get the opportunity to go through a lineup for the third time, no less succeed doing it. And look, from an analytics standpoint, it makes sense, right?
Right.
The second time you'd see a pitcher, the third time you'd see a pitcher, your odds of having success against that pitcher goes up, right? That it gets harder for the pitcher the more they see you. What it tells me about Pablo Lopez is that, like Zach Wheeler, I mean, we're talking about a pitcher who can attack you in a lot of different ways. He's obviously showing hitters much different looks the second and third time around.
Yep.
Not the same thing. And so it keeps them, and that to me is pitching. That to me is,
yep,
is what pitching is all about, is disruption of a hitter's timing. And how do you disrupt a hitter's timing? You throw different looks at them. You throw different pitches at them. You vary your speeds. You vary your delivery in some cases. So when I see that and I watch a guy like him pitch, I kind of think of a throwback guy, a pitcher who can get you deep in a game. And maybe in Miami all those years, we underappreciated Pablo Lopez because he pitched alongside Sandy Alcantara. And yep. It seemed like, you know, seemed like every year, no matter the season they had, the Marlins had arms that they could throw at you. And look, the Marlins, you know, the Twins, in order to acquire Pablo Lopez, traded the batting champ, Luis Arraez, who yep. had a great year with the Marlins. So it tells you that the Marlins and the Twins both understood the value of Pablo Lopez. I also love that trade. I love the fact that it was an old-fashioned baseball trade, good player for good player, and it made both teams better, ultimately. So, you know, I'm sure the Marlins would have loved to have had Pablo Lopez start Game 1 against the Phillies last week, but they also loved having Luis Arraez at the top of their lineup all year. Right. So, you know, I think that I think it was a good baseball trade, and he's obviously a really good pitcher.
Yeah, I know it was off topic, but I just thought it was so interesting. All right, so Max Fried goes tonight for Atlanta. We already talked about Wheeler. Fried only, you know, with everything he's gone through this year, he only ended up making 14 appearances. How have the Phillies dealt with him over time?
You know, he's a good pitcher. Kind of reminds me of, like, little Cole Hamels. You know, he's left-handed. He's got really good stuff. Doesn't seem to come unnerved. The Braves' record when he pitches over the years is tremendous. Obviously, some of that has to do with the fact that they're a really good team. And I'll bet their record with most of their starters on the mound is good. But with his, it's really good. It's something like 87-33 or 43, something like that. They're well way over 500 with Max Fried. The question tonight, it's all going to be about his left index finger. He's had a blister on that finger, which developed in his last start in late September. He missed his last two starts. He pitched a simulated game, I think it was Tuesday, here in Atlanta. He said he came through it fine. He's had blister problems in the past, so this isn't new to him. He's dealt with this stuff before, and he's obviously got a handle on how to do it. But the question is not only the quality of the stuff, but it's also how long is he going to be able to go? Because if he should, you know, if that blister should redevelop or if it should tear, you know, he's not going to be long for the game. So I think everyone's going to be looking to see how his finger responds. But if he's healthy, I think the Phillies have their hands full because he's a really good left-handed pitcher. And you know, like I said, the Braves count on him a lot and play really well behind him. So they're counting on him, though, not only tonight, but also a potential Game 5. They'd have to get there, of course. Mm-hmm. But they're counting on having him pitch twice in this series. And, you know, it's all going to depend on how much, you know, on how healthy that blister is.
Eight pitches, seven sweepers. Orion Kerkering, who, when he was down at the academy, had what was termed a very bad curveball. Well, those seven pitches he threw of the eight were sweepers. What have you seen in this remarkable story?
Yeah, he had what his college coach described as a very bad curveball, and so what they did was they taught him how to throw a slider, and it turns out it might be one of the best sliders in baseball, if not the best.
Yeah.
And I mean all of baseball. You know, it was certainly one of the best pitches in the minor leagues all year. There is a bit of an X factor to this, too. You know, like, there aren't a whole lot of secrets between the Phillies and Braves. They play each other so often during the regular season. But the Braves had not seen Orion Kerkering until Saturday night, not live at least. And, you know, the way he mowed through the bottom of that order in eight pitches, and then, they trust him enough to send him back out to face Acuna to start the eighth. He walked Acuna, but, you know, the fact that they had him in that spot in the first place tells you that it's not just lip service, that Rob Thompson's not just saying, yeah, I trust this guy. He really does trust him. I would expect to see him in leverage spots tonight and then obviously going forward in this series because they're clearly not afraid to use him, and he's got great stuff. And talk about another guy who just seems to be unfazed by it all. I mean, this is somebody who started the season in low A, kind of soared through the system, didn't get to the big leagues until the end of September, made three appearances in the regular season for in the major leagues. Jeff Hoffman calls him the diaper because he's so young and inexperienced, and you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it from watching him. And I've talked to people and said, like, can you give me something to compare this to? And the names that people come up with are like David Price in 2008, mm-hmm. came to the big leagues late in the season and was a factor for the Rays in the bullpen in the postseason. Francisco Rodriguez, K-Rod, in 2002 with the Angels, started the year and spent most of the year in the minor leagues, came up in late September, was a factor in the postseason. And boy, if the Phillies have that on their hands with Orion Kerkering, it's going to be something to watch for as long as they continue to play in the postseason.
Yeah, I think, what, Kerkering was a fifth-round pick? Something like that.
Yeah.
David Price was first overall. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that, you know, those are examples that you get, it tells you that there's really not a – I don't know that there is really a you know, apples to apples, because like you said, fifth-round pick, start of the year, was not on anybody's prospect list and everything like that. It's been a meteoric rise, to say the least.
Yeah, you have players in the field going, we're putting who in? I don't remember this guy from early in the year. And by the way, walking Acuna on four pitches is no sin. All right, so...
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Scott, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us from the ballpark today. Really appreciate it.
Of course, Steve, anytime.